know, I have reached another milestone here. Today is my birthday. It's kind of a milestone birthday. If you don't know what that means or how old I am, don't worry about it, okay? I'm just not getting older, however. I'm entering a new season of life as I see that. And I have to say, in one sense, it's exciting. And I'm filled with anticipation. I really am. I enjoyed the previous season, and yet I realize that that is over and I'm moving on to another season of life. And as I do so, I also approach that, maybe like some of you have who are ahead of me, with a little bit of hesitation and apprehension because I don't know all of what will happen. When I was young or younger anyway, I didn't seem to worry about this part of my life too much. First of all, it just never seemed like it would come. And, you know, it was just one of those things where, you know, when you're young, you think, well, when I get older, you know, I'll deal with that then. Well, suddenly you're older and you're having to deal with it now. And so it does change how you think. And no matter how you approach that, none of us are getting any younger. And unless I live to be around 110, I'm way past the halfway mark right now. And that changes me, as I'm sure it changed all of you who have already reached that and gone beyond. I know some of you are thinking, you know, amateur right now about me, and that's okay. I'm okay with that. I like to play chess. And in the chess game, the last one-third or one-quarter of the game is called the end game. There's whole books written on the end game. I didn't realize how many until I started looking it up. There's a whole slew of books written just on end game strategies. The end game in chess is a very critical time. You can do very well in the beginning. You can do very well in the middle. And you can completely blow it in the end game. You need to know what you're doing in order to do the end game. The end of life is very similar. You have that last phase or final third or quarter of your life that is critical. And when you're young, it always seems like there's enough time to do things over, to make changes, to improve yourself, and to get serious. And now you realize that there's an expiration date on your head. And that's kind of a sobering thing to think about. You know, when you go to the store right now, you can buy like Duracell batteries, and they have like a 10-year shelf life or 10-year, you know, life. And you're looking at the date of that right now, and it's like 2028. Psh, that'll never get here. Actually, that'll be here before you know it. And some of us won't live long enough to see that. And some of us will be in radically different places in our life when that time comes. And so when you get an expiration date on your head, you start to think differently about things. I'm not being morbid. I'm not fixated on death and dying. And don't worry, it's not going to keep bubbling up in our lessons from now on like it has with some other preachers, I know. But at the same time, I'm going through changes in my thinking, in my perspective, in my view of life, in my spiritual outlook. I thought it might be good since, you know, I am going through this day on a Sunday, and it might be valuable to share, and maybe others for them to hear. That's why this lesson is here. Many average chess players have a strong opening or middle game, but they don't know how to wrap things up. As I said, they have a weak end game. And I see this sometimes in the brotherhood. I see this among Christians that I've known for some time. I don't mean just here, but just in a very broad picture there. A great zeal and enthusiasm as a young Christian, and or a great strong faith in the middle of their game, so to speak, but then a weak ending. And that weak ending is not because of age or declining health, although those are factors that can affect that. I understand that. But rather because they lose focus, they lose their vision. They just lose touch. They disconnect. They check out. And that bothers me a lot. It not only bothers me to see it, but it bothers me like, hey, am I going to do that same thing? Am I just going to get to a certain point where I just get tired and go, okay, I'm done. And just, you know, you guys take care of this, and I'm going to go fishing or hunting or, you know, whatever men do when they get old, okay? And that's just really bothers me to think that way. In Hebrews chapter 12, verse 2, it says that, you know, we're supposed to lay aside the sin that so easily entangles us, because it does, and because we should. But it also says as part of that we're supposed to fix our eyes on Jesus. And I don't know that there is an expiration date on that, that, you know, you only fix your eyes on Jesus for a certain amount of time, you know, until you're a certain age. or until certain things have happened in your life, and then you can stop fixing your eyes on Jesus. In fact, I would say we should not only fix our eyes on Jesus when we are young and in middle age, but as we approach that end game, even more so, because that is not a time to get unfocused, not a time to give up. I can't help but notice that I feel differently now than I did at 30 or 40. I know a lot of you can relate to that, okay? And if you're younger, if you are 30 right now, thinking that 40 is not going to be any big deal, your body will tell you otherwise, okay? And then when you hit 50, your body just slams you upside the head with a frying pan. And I'm told when 60 comes along, that it's even worse, but I haven't hit that yet. But my body is daily reminding me that I'm not as young as I used to be. I have to admit, and I'm not tooting my horn when I say this, I'm in relatively good shape for my age. Especially when I look at some of my peers, who some of them are already in walkers and just kind of fading into that last final stage of decrepitude. And that's what frightens me a lot, health-wise, is to have that long, slow decline toward immobility and just inability to enjoy life at all. Even so, I clearly don't have the physical strength and stamina that I used to have, the flexibility, the endurance that I used to have. A couple summers ago, Logan's my son, if you don't know, we climbed Mount Si down there by North Bend. I should say that Logan climbed it, or actually scurried up it, and I was more like crawling and wheezing, scrambling up there. I had to stop a lot, and Logan was making fun of me, and I kept saying to myself, "Your time will come." That's the quiet vengeance of every older person toward a younger one. But it was eye-opening to me that, when I was his age, I could have done what he was doing. And now I can't do that. And that bothers me. I feel on the racquetball court. I play racquetball twice a week, a couple hours on Monday, a couple hours on Friday. And I do pretty well for my age. The fact is, I can't do as well as I used to. And I feel that. My body keeps telling me that. At the same time, my mind is sharp and my mental vision is clear, and my spiritual vision probably more perceptive and understanding and realistic than ever. And I'm not bragging when I say that. I surprise myself with being able to explain and expound on the Word of God sometimes. And I'm not tooting my horn by saying that, but it's also it's not by accident either. I put information into my head all the time from the Bible and about the Bible that can't help but come out eventually if it's put in there with purpose. That's not something just I can do or just preachers can do. Anybody can and should do that. And it will come out with purpose if you put it in there with purpose. 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 16, it says there, "Therefore we do not lose heart, but though our outer man is decaying, yet our inner man is being renewed day by day." Jump down to verse 18. "While we look at the things which are seen, not at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporal, the things which are not seen are eternal." And the point I'm making here is that your physical body will decay, the outer man. That decay is natural, is biological, it is expected. But your inner man being renewed, that is unnatural. It is spiritual in nature, and it is conditional. What I mean by it, that saying that it's unnatural, it's not something that's naturally going to happen over time. Your body decaying is natural. That's a natural process, an earthly process that is going to happen. Whether or not you do anything about it, it's going to happen. But your spiritual life will not improve if you don't do something about it. You have to do something about that. That's why it's also conditional. It doesn't happen automatically just because you get older. And if I could just be candid for a moment, it disappoints me to see so many men and women as they reach their retirement years that's all they talk about is retirement and retiring from work and retiring sometimes from other things. So they've accumulated all this knowledge and this wisdom and this Bible studies and everything that they've been busy with so that they can get to a certain point in their life where they can just shut it all down and start focusing on, things like grandkids or traveling or hunting or fishing or, again, whatever older people do. Sometimes it's just sitting in front of the TV. And I think that's just so sad. on one hand, and it's also kind of pathetic on another, because it's like you have been groomed all your life to prepare for this time in your life, and now this is when you want to shut down when God wants you to gear up. This is when you should be gearing up. You're prepared, you're ready, you have this information. You have something that the younger people don't have, and that's called spiritual maturity, hopefully, and experience. And young people, to all their credit, they can have a measure of experience and a measure of maturity. I'm not trying to take that away from them, but they can't have the last 20 years that you might have had if you're in this age group that I'm in now. They just don't have it, and it's not their fault. It's just they don't have it. And for all the complaints that I hear about millennials and the younger generation, and some of those are valid, and some of those are just perceptions, just as many can be lodged against my age group and older who have virtually checked out. And so I'm not saying this as an accusatory way, like there's some of you that I'm thinking of here. I'm just noticing things, making some general observation about age groups in general, that this is what we are seeing in the brotherhood. And yes, it does affect some of us here in this congregation. It says in Hebrews chapter 4, verse 9, it says there remains a Sabbath rest for the people of God. And if you study that out, what the word Sabbath implies there, it means that the work is done. Because no Sabbath came before the work was done, it always came after the work is done. In other words, the Sabbath, the seventh day of the week in the Hebrew culture and in the law of Moses, that was the last day of the week, not the first. And so the work is done, and then we rest. God's work of creation was done, and then he rested from that specific work. And then our work here on earth is done, and then we rest. I think some people are trying to jump ahead to the rest part before their work is done. So while you're here, your work is still going. And that's how we should see that. And I know what some people are doing is they're redefining their work, and they're saying, well, it's just because I'm not as busy as I was doesn't mean I'm not doing anything. And sometimes that's true, but at other times what happens is we redefine it to allow ourselves to be in a comfortable place. We're not challenging ourselves. You need to challenge yourself. You need to be challenged. Challenging yourself is a good thing. The work is not limited to merely showing up to church services and listening to sermons. There's plenty said in the New Testament. I talk about it all the time, and now Buck's starting to talk about it too in his lessons. There's plenty said in the New Testament about being busy with God's work. Now, in case anyone thinks that I'm just talking about everyone else, I am not. I'm not free from critique here. I feel like, and you can disagree with me, and you might think, oh, it's just, you know, false humility here, like, oh, well, all humility. No, actually, I feel this way. I've been taking a long, hard look at myself and what I've done, and I'm disappointed in how long it has taken me to learn and master some basic things. I'm ashamed of myself for that. And I might say to myself, because I have made this argument for myself, you know, that I've had few that have been willing or able to lead me. I've always been one of those that have been in the front leading others, and there's not a whole lot of people leading me. And that's a fact, not an excuse, it's a fact. But it doesn't take away from the other fact, and that is that even so, I feel like I should be way further ahead than where I'm at. And I do regret all the time lost, time wasted, time used ineffectively or inefficiently. And once time is gone, you can't recoup it again. You can't regain it. There's a lot of talk about second chances. Everyone wants to hear about second chances, and that's a good thing. I think the Bible does offer a second chance in the sense of redemption, in the sense of, you know, being free from condemnation, and even in the sense of even having failed after we become Christians, being able to be forgiven and get back up and start over again. But there's only so many second chances available. Pretty soon your second chances run out. And that's a sobering but realistic way of looking at life. You have a second chance, but you don't have every second chance that there is, because you personally only have so many second chances. There's not an unlimited supply of second chances or of opportunities. Here's a verse that you might find shocking for me to bring it up in this context here. Peter says that we're supposed to be focusing on suffering for righteousness and for what is right and so on in the verses prior. And he says, for the time already past is sufficient for you to have carried out the desire of the Gentiles, having pursued a course of sensuality, lust, drunkenness, and then goes on with some other pretty nasty things there. And I'm using this verse in application to myself, not because I did all those things, but because the principle does apply that the time already passed is, the time is already passed, I should say, for me to use excuses of myself that I'm too young or I'm too inexperienced or I'm unprepared. There was a time when I was too young and too inexperienced and too unprepared. I can't use that excuse anymore. Because I'm reaching the part of my life where I'm supposed to be, well, not young anymore, and I'm supposed to be well-trained and well-prepared. And it's time now for me to take on responsibilities that in the past I allowed others to assume for me, or maybe instead of me. Now, I'm speaking of myself here, using myself as an example. I'm also speaking of my age group, and therefore I might be speaking to some of you as well. You know, we can all say that, well, I'm too young, too inexperienced, I don't know the scriptures well enough, and, you know, I'm just not as good like you at memorizing things. I don't think I'm that good at memorizing anything, honestly. But when you apply yourself, you can do a lot. And when you have a goal in mind of what you want to accomplish, it's amazing what the human spirit and the human will can do in achieving that objective. I've been talking a long time here in the last several months about elders, church elders, but church elders are not the only kind of elders mentioned in the Bible. For example, we have Titus chapter 2, older men are to be temperate, dignified, sensible, sound in faith, in love, and perseverance. That's not talking about church elders, that's talking about, well, older men. And so church elders, there is a function there, and there's a responsibility there, and there's a role there, and I understand that. But what about older men? What that means then is that God expects older men and older women, because he goes on to say that in the next verse, to not only to do something if you're directly asked, but rather to be proactive, to be looking for things to do. The older people should be leading the way in example, in their teaching, in their mentoring. We should not be looking to the young people and saying, well, I hope these young whippersnappers, whatever we might call them, you know, they hope they get their act together and do something. Well, we need to have gotten our act together already, and we need to be doing those things. In fact, we should be leading them by example, and not just passively either, like, well, I'm going to do this thing and I hope somebody watches me. We should be going up to them and training them how to do that, tapping them on the shoulder and saying, can I help you? Let me help you. Let me show you. And I know what the older people are going to say, oh, no one wants to hear what I have to offer, and the young people resist that. You're going to get some of that. It's true. And that's to the discredit of the younger, because they're really avoiding an extremely valuable opportunity. But at the same time, there's going to be some of those that say, I want to learn, and I want to do better. I want to give the young people all the credit in the world that their zeal is great for God. It's just sometimes it's misdirected, or they just don't know what to do with it. And that's where we can come in. Those of us who are experienced, we can help those people. Whether or not I am ever a church elder, my role as an older man has already started and must continue to take shape and provide a viable contribution to my congregation, and so it is with the rest of you as well. All that said, I'm starting to see things differently. It's not like it just happened last night, by the way. I mean, this has been going on for the last couple of years, but it's really coming to a head as you kind of hit those milestones, right? I'm starting to see things differently in ways I never thought possible, either because I lacked the wisdom or the maturity, or because I just never realized there was a different way to see things. Have you ever been in that position where you thought you had everything all figured out, and then someone showed you a new way, and you went, never saw that way before. Really thought I had this thing all wired together. I thought I had a good answer to all that, and then somebody shows me something I never thought about before and actually makes my life better. I see things differently, things differently. When I was younger, I latched on to specific keepsakes and mementos. It was all about, you know, getting this toy or that tool or this doodad or that gizmo. I'm ready to let go of things because things are not as important to me as they were before. And I take that verse seriously that Paul talks about, the temporal versus the eternal. I'm not saying that nice things don't have a certain place in my life. We just did some home remodel. You all saw that came over to our house the other night. You know, we've done some upgrades and things like that, and that's all nice. But actually, honey and I are in a stage of minimalizing. We're in a minimalist approach right now where we're starting to get rid of things. And if you went downstairs in our family room, you saw that. There's a couch, there's a chair, there's a TV, there's a lamp, and that's about it. And honestly, that's about how I want to keep it. I just don't need all those other things. In fact, probably even some of those things don't need to be there. So it's just, you know, just kind of this minimalist approach here. I know honey just gave me the eye. But one thing I'm getting at here, though, is that, you know, one nice thing or a few nice things is a whole lot more important than a whole bunch of cheap things. Quality is better than quantity. And I see that, too, in people, if you will. You know, that you can have a lot of people doing pretty much nothing, or you can have one or two people doing a whole lot. Those one or two people are valuable. They're extremely valuable. Things now pale in comparison to what they used to be. I'm ready to let go of things. I see people differently. When I was younger, and I mean not like last week, but considerably younger, I was quick to assess, to evaluate, to criticize, and sometimes to dismiss people. And now I have a deep sense of concern for the various plights that people go through. Let me give an example here, and I hope I don't offend anyone when I say that, but sometimes when I went to the gym before when I was younger, say, you know, 10, 15 years ago even, you know, I'd see some overweight people there struggling, lifting their weights, and they're sweating profusely and everything else, and I just kind of felt sorry for them. Like, dude, what's the point? You know, it's just, you're just probably going to hurt yourself or something like that. It was kind of a pitiful thing. And now I look at those same people, because I still see them there, and I actually admire them. I admire them a lot, because those people are getting out and trying to better themselves. And those people are going through a great deal of effort to do so. And they're willing to put up with the criticism and the ridicule and even the mockery on some people's part. They're willing to do that in order to better themselves. That takes a lot of guts, and I really admire that. And the same with older men and older women. When I see them there, when I see those older men and older women at the gym, I used to think, what are you doing here? Okay. And then as I start getting closer to that age group, it's like, okay, I get it now. You're trying to keep things intact, trying to keep yourself fit. And I appreciate that. It's a very different perspective I have now than I used to. And that carries into the spiritual work as well. Once I might have said, you know, if I taught something in a class or in private or public, whatever it was, I might have said, well, I just can't believe you don't get this right away. You know, I mean, I might not have said that out loud, but I might have been thinking that. And now I'm thinking to myself, and sometimes actually say this, let me explain that differently or better to you so you can get that. Or I might have said, well, I can't believe, I'm just too busy to explain that to you. And now I say, well, let me take a little extra time because obviously this thing is important to you. It's changing how I'm approaching people and how I'm viewing their plight, how I'm seeing their situation. It is changing me. And I hope that it's changing me for the better. I've lost a lot of friends. Not only through death, some of them just drift out. And that's a hard thing to deal with. That's a hard thing to weather over time. Losing a friend is one thing. Losing several friends, family members, things like that, that gets really difficult to do. Sometimes people do just drift away. Sometimes they just fall off the grid. I do value the time I spend with people, but I also, and maybe this is a guardedness in some way, I also don't rest my success, my existence upon other people because I don't know how long they're going to be here. What I'm saying with that is I enjoy spending time with you all, but you all are not my foundation. And I don't mean that in any disrespectful way. If you all walked away, I would still have a foundation. Because my foundation, my spiritual well-being, is not dependent upon you all being faithful or even being my friends. And I'm advocating that. I'm not an isolationist. I'm a realist when I say that. You should not base your spiritual well-being or your future on people. You should base it on God and what He does for you. I see myself differently. In some ways, I'm just starting to wake up to what I ought to be versus what I've grown comfortable with. Now, I'm one of those that gets up there and in a pulpit and class and like, hey, we need to change. Let me just tell you a little secret about myself. I am terrified of change just as much as you are. I don't like it. It is uncomfortable. If I had it in my own perfect world, then I would just find a nice, comfortable place to be and stay there forever. I don't like change. But I've also come to realize that change is good and healthy and necessary. I cannot grow and mature if I don't change. It is said of alcoholics that when they become alcoholics, at the year they become alcoholics, which is usually a pretty young age, sadly, that they just are frozen in time emotionally. If a man becomes an alcoholic, or boy really, at age 16, he will be a 16-year-old for a long time. And I think that happens to Christians too in some ways, that with either traditionalism or culturalism, we get stuck, we get frozen in time. We get traditional ideas in our head and we get stuck there emotionally or maybe spiritually, we just get stuck there. We latch onto them tenaciously and we think that that's where our identity is that I've always come to believe, my preacher's always taught me, and my parents always said, I've always had this belief, and we latch on to things like that and we get frozen there, just like the alcoholic, get stuck. Or maybe it's culturalism, like my culture is so important to me, I need to do everything I can to preserve my culture. That has nothing to do, though, with your spiritual walk with Christ, because with all due respect, Christ doesn't care about your culture. He cares about your soul. So you're latching onto something that is less important to Christ, and you're losing track of something, losing vision of something that is more important to Christ. And you're the one that has it backward, if that's the case, and not Christ. And I see that happening in the church. When I was young, I said, I don't want to grow old. And now I'm saying, I don't want to be young. Not that I don't admire some aspects of youth. I'll say that in a minute. But in my maturity, in my mature thinking, in my self-awareness, I don't want to be young anymore. I do miss the energy. I do miss the stamina. I do miss the metabolism. You may not know this, but when Honey and I married back in 1989, I was a hefty 135 pounds. And now I'm 20 pounds heavier. And okay, well, maybe not more. It's a little bit more than 20 pounds, but still, I had a better metabolism at that time. There's more to being grown up than just aging. Growing old and growing up are not necessarily the same thing. Not everyone who is old or older is grown up or upward. Some just got older. Sometimes people get meaner and bitter in their age, not better. Philippians chapter 3, verse 13 and 14. Brethren, I don't regard myself as laying hold of it yet. To get to the it, you have to read the verses before that. Basically, it's talking about that final resurrection and all that leads to that. But one thing I do, forgetting what lies behind, reaching forward to what lies ahead, I press on toward the goal for the prize of the upward call of God in Christ Jesus. Paul is not advocating here just simply growing older. That's not what he's saying. He's not saying, I just reach out and want to grow older. Because everybody grows older, even atheists and heathens and pagans and witches and, secularists and everything else. But growing upward is something that only Christians can do. If you think about it spiritually, growing upward is something only Christians can do. Ascending in our thinking and our spiritual maturity toward a known objective. I've come to appreciate this passage so much more as I get older. Not just because I am getting older, but because I am also, I hope, in the process of growing upward. And I know a lot of you are too, and I'm glad for that. Glad I'm not alone in that. I see Christ differently. I know in Hebrews 13:8 it says Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. But Chad is not the same way. Chad was not the same yesterday and today and forever. My view of Jesus Christ is far more personal now. I don't just see him as hanging on a cross, fulfilling a plan. I see him more as my guide, my mentor, my friend, my source of strength. I'm literally in awe of his virtue and compassion, even his critical thinking. I'm literally in awe of that. I just shake my head with wonder sometimes. I read through the accounts, the same ones you do, and I read through that, and I just go, wow, he had it so together. He knew what he was talking about. He has such a perfect, beautiful vision, and he has such a powerful life-changing, life-fulfilling love for his father. And it shames me. It shames me that I don't have that same thing. I'm trying, but pales in comparison. I literally come to tears thinking about his love for his father, but also his love for us and his love for me. I just can't help but being emotionally moved by that. I see God differently. Again, not that God has changed, but how I see him has changed. In my early version of God, when I was younger, I saw God like I saw me and others and the world pretty much like I saw things through my own eyes. And now I'm learning to see more and more like God sees things. Not that I'm becoming like God, but I am becoming more godly in my thinking. And things become far more better and accurate than what I had had before. God used to be, to me, stern and critical and intolerant and lacking compassion because, well, in many ways, that's what I was. And I just thought that God was like me or that God was, you know, on that same path there. I still believe God is demanding and expects commandments to be fulfilled and so on, but I also see God as being filled with grace and mercy and compassion. I used to pray to God, God, give me strength so I can do your will. Like, you know, give me that strength and then I know what to do with that. I'll apply it here and here and here and do all these things. And now I pray, God, be my strength and show me what to do with that strength because I'm not smart enough to know on my own. And even if I think I was, then I still want you to guide me in that. So I'm not just plugging into God as a power source anymore like I used to. Now I'm realizing that God works through me. I'm more like a conduit. And God works through me in ways that he wants. I see death differently. When I was younger, death was something to fear because it was all about leaving everything familiar to me for a world that I know nothing about. And now I see death as something to look forward to in the sense that I can leave behind this polluted, corrupted world and go to a place that is no longer not polluted or not corrupted. I'm allowed to go where everything is pure and perfect. And I don't think when you're young you really have that perspective. I mean, you see it, but you don't really get it. At least I didn't. And I don't know that anyone in my age group when I was growing up did get that. Death is always a kind of a romanticized thing, like, I'll die for Jesus if I have to. And it's like that sort of language, but we're not always willing to live for him because we just don't see ourselves in that right frame of mind. When I was younger, I thought of what would be in heaven or what was not going to be in heaven. There's going to be mansions and streets of gold and pearly gates. Those are things to see. And there's not going to be, billboards and pollution and lawyers. But I didn't offend any lawyers there. But the idea now I look at is who is going to be there. And that's more important than what's going to be there. I don't look at fellow Christians and trying to meet up with fellow Christians that have died, you know, or even angels or archangels. But I'm looking forward to seeing the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. And if I see the Godhead, then my life is fulfilled. Because I know that when I see the Godhead, that will be the culmination of my existence. And you might say, well, then what do you do after that? No, you don't understand that culmination will never end. That will be a moment that will be forever new and ever-present. When you look at go to funerals, and look at gravestones, you hear things or you see things even etched on the gravestone. Oh, the deceased loved to sing. They're probably singing in heaven now. Or they love to hunt. They're probably hunting in heaven. They love to dance. They're probably dancing in heaven. I don't want anyone thinking that of me. Like, oh, Chad loved to drink coffee. He's probably drinking coffee in heaven in a heavenly cafe, you know, where there's free refills forever. And please do not think of that when you think of me. Because that is something that I do here. When I go there, I'm looking forward to something far better than that. I'm not going to just be recreating my world here in my vision of there. And in other words, I'm not just trying to extend my life into a heavenly context. I'm looking forward to an entirely new life where there are going to be things happening and things I'll be doing that I don't even know about right now. And while that used to terrify me, now it excites me quite a bit. Revelation 21 verse 5 says that God is making all things new. Well, what does that mean? Well, as I read it, it says it's making all things new. He's not just, you know, renewing old things or refurbishing old things. He's making everything new. Will you meet people that you knew here? Of course you will. But we won't seek to continue earthly friendships. In heaven, there will be one family. It will not be your family. It will be God's family. And you'll either be there and be a part of that, or you won't be there at all. It's the only family that matters is God's family. 5 years ago, I hit another milestone, and I offered some personal reflections at that time. Maybe every 5 years I'll do this, I don't know. The point is that things change, life changes, people change, God stays the same. And he's always right where he's always been, precisely where he needs to be, and he doesn't change because he's already perfect. And that's a good thing to have in your mind. The only constant force in the whole universe is not some physical natural law or the speed of light or something like that. More importantly, it is God himself. That is the constant in your life. The rest of us are far from perfect, and therefore we can change and we need to change. But we need to change for the better. God provides us the human potential. The Holy Spirit provides the information as to how, and Christ provides the ideal example of what that looks like. Personally, I'll just say I'm not happy about getting older in itself, but I'm glad I'm not staying young forever. I'll just say it. Recently, about a month ago, I was at a retail store and the clerk gave me a senior discount. And I told Honey at the time, I said, "That is so irritating. How offensive." And then as I walked away, I thought, you know what? I've earned this. It's not such a bad thing. But seriously, every single day I look at now is one step closer to God and meeting Christ and just the thrill of heaven. For many people, they see it differently. They're one step closer to judgment day and standing trial and being cast out into outer darkness. Let me just say that no Christian ought to live his or her life worried about being lost. We ought to be overflowing with gratitude that we have been found. Think about that. Gratitude for being found, for being rescued from our condemnation and our destruction, our hopelessness. This is what we should be dwelling on. Not how horrible it's going to be when I stand before God trembling and giving account for my life, but how wonderful it will be to have Jesus as your advocate saying, "This one belongs to me, he is forgiven." And God says, "Enter in, good and faithful servant." One day, if you are faithful, you will be safe in the arms of Jesus, never to grow old again, never to feel pain again, never to face separation again. But until then, you and I, we need to work on our end game. Because it doesn't matter how well you did in the first half, the first third, or first whatever. You have to stay focused. You have to keep going. And you cannot give up. You can't possibly overcome the world if you grow soft and tired and lazy on your way out of the world. So we have to stay focused. That's my encouragement to myself. It's also my encouragement to you. Work on your end game, whatever your end game ends up being, okay? Because I don't know what your end game is age-wise or year-wise or where you're at right now, but I do know that your end game is coming, and you need to work on that as well as the other parts of your life. That's my lesson for this evening. It's just some personal reflections, some personal thoughts on where we're all at, and maybe you benefited from that in some way. If there's anyone that needs to respond by coming forward tonight, this would be your time to do so as Richard leads us in song. Let's stand and sing that.